Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So over the next several days, we're going to hear a lot about the Build Back Better Act. Look, this is good policy. It's a step in the right direction. As I said from the beginning, I don't think it's enough. But you get what you can. You take the win, and you continue to organize to move forward. And as I understand, on Thursday, a number of groups aligned with the Blue-Green Alliance are going to hold a press conference and talk about why this is so important. The steelworkers, the Sierra Club, the painters union, a bunch of folks going to say, look, this is good for the country. It's good for our members and our friends, but it's good for all of us. And here to share some thoughts on what exactly is in this Build Back Better that's going to make lives much better, I've asked Jason Walsh to come talk with us. Jason is the executive director of the group Blue-Green Alliance. Jason, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
So walk me through this. Having this big press conference on Thursday, what's the pitch?
The pitch is that people have been talking about the Build Back Better Act as a social policy bill, as a safety net bill, as a human infrastructure bill. We want to talk about it first and foremost as a jobs bill. And we're going to be releasing some new jobs analysis of some of the major investments of the Build Back Better Act. And we're going to be talking about what that means for workers, for job quality, for cleaner air and water, and for building an economy that works for more people, which we need to do.
Yeah, I've been saying I look at this as kind of a reset of the last 40 years of bad policy, and neoliberal trade policies and supply side voodoo Reaganomics all kind of balled into one. This is kind of a little bit of a reset, not as big as I would like, but it's a little bit.
Yeah. And I would say it's a really big reset in a couple of different ways. So I'll give you an example. Probably the biggest job creator for solar and wind jobs over the last 10 years has been clean energy tax credits. They have never included the kind of job quality labor standards, right, that other federal investments have historically included. Principal ones being prevailing wage on the construction side and Buy America on the manufacturing side. Both of those are now included in clean energy tax credits to the tune of $320 billion over 10 years. So not only are we going to create a whole bunch of jobs, we're going to lift job quality and job access in these sectors as a whole, which is going to be fundamentally important.
Now, that's an extremely important point. It's one of those things that I've been talking about for a while, that they were able to keep prevailing wage in this, even though Tom Coburn and some Republicans did do their diligence to try and strip it out. It's still right there, though.
Yeah, we've got it in. There's also some really exciting provisions that will incent the purchase of union-made, American-made electric vehicles. I think most of your listeners know we're kind of at this pretty historic inflection point in terms of the future of the automotive industry in this country, right? Where, it's not a question of whether we're going to shift to electric vehicles. It's a question of
how fast,
when, and who, and where are they going to be made, and what are the quality of jobs, and who benefits, right? And we think the policies in the Build Back Better Act, in particular, a bonus for a consumer. It's basically it's a consumer tax credit where you get extra money if you buy an electric vehicle that is union made and American made. And yep, it's exactly those kind of policies we think that are going to drive the clean energy economy in a high road direction.
Yeah, boy, I wish they would have included that back in 2009 and 2010 when they were incentivizing solar panels. Because when we put our panels on our house, they're Chinese made solar panels. There was no choice on where you're going to get them from the dealers. I wish there was this kind of provision in place back then, because there's no question that I would have bought the American made panels. There's no question about that.
Yeah, and to be clear, not only are there Buy America incentives on tax incentives for the deployment of solar and wind and other renewables, but there are also tax credits to support standing up the manufacturing of those components here in the United States. So solar cells, wafers, inverters, trackers, we want those American made, we want them union made.
No, but again, this sounds like, you know, common sense stuff that should have been in all of our bills. This is the kind of, when I listen to my Republican friends talk about America First, this is the kind of stuff that I go, yeah, this, if you're talking about this, I'm there with you.
Yeah. And look, I mean, I think it's based on a recognition that the American people, whether they're Republican or Democratic or independent, whatever, they are only going to embrace this transition to a clean energy economy if they see real economic gains, right? Working people in this country have to see those gains. And for too long, we have relied on unreliable global supply chains in which this stuff is made under conditions that don't meet any reasonable standard of human rights, of worker rights, of environmental protection. And Build Back Better basically shifts that completely.
Yeah. Now, you guys, you know, your organization is you know, a kind of a coming together of the steel workers and the Sierra Club, right? That's kind of your thing.
Those are our founders: Leo Gerard, president of Steelworkers; Carl Pope, director of the Sierra Club. You know, our founding principle, still our guiding principle, which is this belief that we shouldn't have to choose between good jobs and a clean environment. That we can and have to have both. And I have to say that this is probably the most pivotal point in the history of BGA where we can actually put that principle into practice. Right.
That's where I was going. Policy. You know, I was going there saying, look, this is the, you know, the steel workers who, you know, people are like, oh, you know, dirty steel, and the environmentalists who people say, well, we shouldn't have any of this, coming together and going, no, we can have an environment. We can have a clean environment, and we can still have good jobs, and we can still manufacture things, and we can do it here if we had the right policy. And that's right where I was going. Is this that bill? Is this the one that you guys have been working on, well, for your entire existence?
Yeah, this is that bill. And let's be clear. I mean, you know, if you talk to your average steelworker rank and file member, you know, they don't see themselves in this clean economy, right? Because we haven't done these things to date. And we can't expect them, those rank and filers, to embrace this transformation unless they're getting the jobs, unless they're making this stuff.
Exactly, because
they see themselves in this.
Because the steelworkers, you know, I go back to the 80s, you know, how the steelworkers that I knew were basically thrown to the side when trade policies or when, you know, we allowed more steel to come into the country. People are a little change scares people because we've left people behind. For me, this bill helps us move in the right direction while trying not to leave people behind and saying we're going to make the next industry and what's coming next just as good as what we're leaving behind. And I think that's the important component here.
That's right. And it really embraces something that for too long our elected officials have run away from, which is this notion that you can actually use industrial policy to shape an economy in a way that benefits workers and communities.
Yeah, but you know, outside of just the climate stuff, because there's a little bit in this, right? I mean, there's probably a lot of climate stuff in this, which is why, you know, there are people pointing at Joe Manchin saying that he's the reason that this is being holed up. And I guess that should be another question I should ask. What are the chances of Manchin getting on board with this?
We think at the end of the day he's gonna vote for this because it's good for West Virginia.
You would hope,
and I'll, you know, and let me put a finer point on that, right? I mean, I would say to date that the people of West Virginia have experienced more of the economic pain as opposed to the economic gain of this transition, right? They've seen a lot of coal economy jobs lost, mostly because of an economic shift in the power sector to using natural gas, but you know, we could talk about that, right? But where they have lagged is both in terms of investment in clean energy, right? They've got like less than a gigawatt of solar and wind in the whole state. That's anemic. But also investments in critical infrastructure, you know, lead service line replacement, mass transit, you know, all of these things, broadband, and legislation like the Build Back Better Act, legislation like the just passed infrastructure bill. That's the kind of investment they need to actually bring their state and bring their people into, you know, into a more hopeful future. And I think at the end of the day, we hope Senator Manchin recognizes that and will vote for this thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I look at Biden's plan as like, you know, the three-legged stool. You had the rescue plan right at the out of the gate that helped us get through that period. You now have this bipartisan infrastructure bill that should have passed, you know, months ago. And also this Build Back Better plan to kind of reset and provide a little bit of social safety net, as well as dealing with some of our climate issues. I think you have to have all three in order for this thing to work.
That's right. And there's a bunch of stuff in there that we haven't worked as much on, but which I think is just as important to your listeners and to me personally, right? Investments in affordable housing and childcare, you know, in the care economy, which is critically important for our labor partners like SEIU and AFT. You know, we need to create a resilient economy that is prepared to respond to, you know, disasters, whether those are pandemics or climate disasters, and that primarily means investing in workers.
Yeah. Now, the former president today called all of this stuff the dream of communism bill. you know, this is the part that's just kind of interesting to me, that what we're talking about, the investments that we're talking about in doing something about climate change, in helping granny stay in her home a little bit longer, and doing some of the things around education and healthcare, the opponents of it are, you know, going to the most extreme measures of it's creeping socialism. You know, Trump saying it's the dream of communism bill, all meant to scare people to not pay attention to what's actually in it. Because when you start talking to people about what's actually in it, people are like, yeah, why haven't we done that already?
Yeah. I mean, it is extreme, and it's frankly ridiculous. And it's interesting coming from someone who promised for 4 years to pass an infrastructure bill. Never did. Now President Biden and Congress have passed that, and now we're moving on to the Build Back Better Act.
So, out of this press conference that you're going to have on Thursday, what's the hope? What's the hope that comes out of this?
We need the House of Representatives to pass the Build Back Better Act. We need them to. It's ready to go. We need it to be voted on. Either as soon as this weekend or certainly before the Thanksgiving break next week. We need to pass it, and then we need to send it to the Senate. Senate needs to pass it and send it to the president's desk.
Now, the Senate, obviously, the Senate's where the problem is going to be. I think it will pass the House, no?
I think it will. We don't have big margins in either chamber, but We got a few more votes in the House, but at the end of the day, in the Senate, every Democrat is going to have to vote for it.
Is there going to be a Republican that votes for it? Anyone? Do you think? Because Trump seems to think, and there's no proof of this, but the former guy seems to think that there, because of Mitch McConnell's ineffective leadership, that there will be Republicans voting for it. Do you see that?
No, I don't. I wish I could. I give you a different answer, but I think it's Democrats who are going to have to pass this thing.
And that's the thing that bugs me, because, you know, this is the kind of stuff that is going to make people's lives better. And when you do the messaging around, you know, how it's going to make people's lives better, I think people take to it. Is that your experience? The more you let people know what's in it, that, you know, people come around to it.
Oh, I mean, we've done polling in Pennsylvania, in Wisconsin, in Michigan. I mean, Independents, Democrats, Republicans, we've actually tested a bunch of, in plain English, a bunch of the provisions of this, like the manufacturing provisions, and we see support up to 90%, right? And this is, you know, with voter samples that include equal numbers of Trump voters and Biden voters. So, you know, what you're hearing on Fox News, what you're hearing from the former president is a bunch of spin that bears no relation to the actual legislation that is being voted on. But look, it is an unapologetically pro-union piece of legislation. And on that basis alone, unfortunately, given the state of the Republican Party these days, every Republican senator, I think, is going to vote against it.
And that's so weird. I mean, you know, the reality is, and we're about the same age, probably. I remember when there used to be Republicans who didn't vehemently hate unions, like or viscerally hate unions like we see now, that there were, you know, a large number of pro-union Republicans, and they're just not there anymore.
No, there are a handful, and some of them showed up in I think in a very brave way to vote for the infrastructure bill. You now see the you now see what they're having to deal with, from death threats to threats of being expelled from committees by their Republican colleagues. It's actually pretty scary.
Yeah, we live in crazy times when you're talking about death threats over making the roads and the bridges better. I mean, the bipartisan infrastructure bill was the easy one. That's the thing that everybody wants. Everybody wants to go over a bridge and not have to worry about ending up in the drink. Nobody wants potholes. We want the lead pipes removed. All of the stuff in the hard infrastructure bill, nobody's against. It's crazy that these guys be getting death threats. But hey, like the former guy said, you gave the Democrats a win, and that's sadly where this is at. Last question. What can we do to help? What's the marching order going forward?
Your listeners should ask your elected representatives in the House and in the Senate to vote for the Build Back Better Act, and vote for building an economy that is cleaner and stronger and more equitable and more union.
Any specific targets you got in mind?
Oh, I would certainly like your listeners in West Virginia to be communicating with Senator Manchin, I think it's you know, in the House we've got a handful of targets. I won't name them here, but I think the best message we can leave your listeners with is contact your representatives right now.
There you go.
This is the time to do it.
Good stuff, Jason. I appreciate the time. Keep up the great work, and I hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
Thank you, Rick. I'd love to.
Thanks so much. Jason Walsh, Executive Director of the Blue Green Alliance. We'll get links out on how you can check out their website, bluegreenalliance.org. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.